My special guest in the studio tonight moved to Sydney from New Zealand in 2009 to continue tertiary study at the Sydney Conservatorium of Music, where he graduated with first class honours in 2011. He's worked with many prominent Australasian and international artists and is in high demand as a sideman and features on a number of albums released by Sydney-based artists. He's the recipient of numerous awards, including a University of Sydney Australian Postgraduate Award and the Sydney Conservatorium of Music Diane Fisher Award. Steve Barry, welcome to Now's the Time.
Thanks, Frank. It's great to be here.
Steve, BW, that opening track.
Sure.
The initials of someone special, or?
Actually it is. It's just short for Ben Wendell, who's an American saxophone player.
Okay.
And he has a band called Kneebody. And I sort of went through a phase of listening to a lot of them. And so I just dedicated the song to him. Yeah.
But Steve, can I ask you about your musical background
Sure.
and how did you come to the piano and who were your early influences?
Well, I guess I started playing piano when I was about 5. My parents got me into piano lessons. I was a pretty terrible student, I guess. I was pretty uncommitted, and my piano teacher had to, she was sort of desperate to try and get me into something, and this was when I was maybe 10 or something, and the Royal Schools of Music in the UK brought out this jazz piano syllabus, just 5 grades, 1 to 5, and so she sort of threw that at me and said, "Look, try this." And so that was kind of my first exposure to jazz, and same sort of deal. Like it was at start, she had to used to bribe me with chocolate bars to improvise, and it was like pulling teeth, but eventually there was something about the freedom of it and the creativity involved that really caught me. And so I did all 5 grades of that through sort of early high school. And in high school, I met a bass player and a drummer who were in the same year as me, and we started playing a bit. We had a regular gig down at this cafe in Mission Bay on the waterfront in Auckland, and we played there for about 2.5 years,
Wow.
4 seasons. So we're out there in winter with, fingerless gloves on, and we're doing it for $10 an hour and a meal or something. And so, but it was great because we were, experimenting with things and playing together as a band all the time and really exploring. And
Yeah.
so that was during high school, and then sort of after high school, I took a gap year, and then after the gap year, I did first year at Auckland University, and there I had the opportunity to start playing and learning from a saxophone player called Roger Maddins, who you mentioned earlier, playing at the Jazz Group Festival. And we picked up a gig in Auckland City at this place called the London Bar, and we which is sort of a big traditional jazz venue in Auckland. And we started doing 3 nights a week and then cut back to 1 night a week, just Friday nights. And we did that for about 2 years with Roger. And then the scene in Auckland was kind of, there wasn't really much happening at the time, and things were starting to die down a bit. And so I'd made a couple of trips to Australia and saw what sort of opportunities were available here, and decided to make the move and continue studying at the con.
Can I take you all the way back to that tender age of 10 again? And I'm just wondering, do you
Yeah.
firstly recall that particular moment where that freedom, that improvisation, where you discovered that and how that may have fa made you feel?
Well, I think I can't remember the exact feeling, but I do remember, as with all things, you kind of have to grow into them. And I remember I used to create. I used to, I'd go home, and there was always these little sections. They'd have written music, and there'd be a section for improvising. And I'd go home, and I'd sort of figure out something that worked. During that, I had no idea about theory or anything, and my music teacher was kind of learning at the same time as I was learning, because she was classically trained and didn't really know much about jazz as well. So I'd just go home, and there were these sort of left-hand guide voicings, and then I'd just play those and try and figure out something in the right hand that worked over the top. And then once I'd figure that out, I'd have that one thing, and every time the improvisation came around, I'd play the same thing over and over again, which worked, because it, I thought it sounded good anyway. And then slowly, I remember the time where I started to realize that you could do that spontaneously. And I guess there's the difference between composition and improvisation. Firstly composing something, and then gradually narrowing down the time it takes to in between that process, where you can compose instantaneously. But yeah, especially when I started playing with a band and with the guys, with my mates in Auckland, and we were just playing all the time and exploring things. And that was really the start. That's when it started getting exciting.
But what is it about the New Zealand water, Steve? I mean, it produces so many quality jazz pianists. Now, I was thinking about this this afternoon.
There's quite a list, yeah.
Alan Broadbent, yep. Mike Nock, Judy yep. Bailey, Dave McRae, Gerard Masters, Aaron Ottignon, Jan Preston. And we're lucky enough to host, you know, virtually all of those.
Yeah, sure.
And you could probably add to the list. And yourself, of course.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think of anyone else. But yeah, there's quite a few. It's just one of those strange things. I don't know.
Did you notice it when you were there? Or?
Well, I noticed it when I started to learn more about Australia, because Mike and Judy, I didn't really meet until I came to the con. Hmm. And then you sort of started to discover that there's tons of people. I actually met Alan Broadbent through a drummer in Auckland called Frank Gibson, really yeah. great older drummer.
Yep.
And we've done quite a lot of playing over the years, and he introduced me to Alan. He did a gig with Alan when he was out in New Zealand a couple of years ago.
Okay.
And Alan's just a beautiful guy, and there's a live DVD of Diana Krall in Paris. It's early 2000s or something, and he's conducting the orchestra and has done some of the arrangements. And
I've got that at home. I should check that out.
Yeah, it's beautiful. He arranges for he's done some stuff for Nathan Haynes as well, and like he's just a really accomplished guy and a beautiful human being.
Now, these are all your own compositions.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
Well, Breathe Deep. Tell us a little bit about that particular track.
Well, it's kind of the song itself is just based on a really straightforward ostinato in the left hand, just voicing in fifths, and this melody is sort of through composed in that because it's fifths in the left hand, the chords are pretty vague what the harmony actually is, so the melody sort of weaves in and out of different harmonies and different melodies, and yeah, it's just a sort of meditative.
I've heard you perform a number of times in recent years, and it's always, as I said at the top of the show, it's always been as a sideman because you're in such in high demand. But with your own music here, we've taken a couple of tracks now. If you had to describe your sound or your type of music, how would you describe it?
That's an interesting question. I guess one of the things that is really strongly resonates with me lately is a really powerful group interaction, and not of the, you know, like a really deep group interaction. And so sort of the process for writing the songs and rehearsing the songs is I'll bring a tune into the guys into rehearsal, and we'll really take the song apart and figure out how it's going to work and what the groove is going to be, and so we'll have a blueprint for how the song is. But at the same time, we spent a couple of weeks touring around New Zealand and Australia to launch the album at the end of last year. And it was interesting to play the same repertoire every gig, because it really opens you up to lots of different possibilities. And it was the first time that we'd actually played together in a while, because Alex has been living in Italy for a while, and so we hadn't really been doing much work together. So it was nice to actually get back to playing the music, and I spent 3 months overseas earlier in the year as well. So it was really nice just to hang out and to slowly develop this thing. And it's really exciting what things you come up with in that process.
Now, obviously the idea of jazz being, you know, never really one performance is the same as the other.
Yeah.
When you are concentrating so much on your own compositions like this, How difficult is that to sort of maintain that spontaneity night after night when you're touring like that?
Well, it's hard, because I think you have to put yourself in the right mindset, because it's very easy to turn up to the gig, especially because of the nature of our work and how we survive as musicians. You know, we turn up and go to the function gig and, you know, play the standards for 3 hours and get paid, take the money, go home, and, you know, and we've paid the rent for the week. But you know, turning up to a gig and putting yourself in that creative mindset is quite another thing entirely.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah, and so you have to really decide to put yourself into that space. And when you're doing that sort of night after night with the same bunch of guys on a tour, and you're hanging out in the meantime, and you're really developing this sort of this friendship and this musical bond, then that just comes naturally. It's very, very easy. But it is hard sometimes, because sometimes you don't have a good night, and then especially as a band leader, I find it hard sometimes because, you know, something's not working in the band and you can't, you know, you're thinking about what's not working, and then you're thinking about how you can change it, and then you're thinking about presenting the gig, and all of these things start to impede on your process of actually making music, you
Yes,
know.
yes.
And once that starts to happen, it's very hard to reverse that thought process. And
But of course, you've got two quite accomplished musicians, artists
sure.
with you in Alex Bonham, the bass, and Tim Firth
Yeah.
in your trio. Now, what particular characteristics of their playing especially attracts them to you?
Well, I met Alex at the con when I moved over to Australia, and we started playing together pretty much from the first day. And Alex is he's one of these guys that has this sort of insatiable desire and hunger for learning. So it's always inspiring to hang out with him because he's always got the new thing, and he's always, you know, trying something, and there's always, you know, this excitement that he brings to the party. And he's on the bandstand, he's a really creative guy, and he's always suggesting things musically, and that's really inspiring. And Tim, I met, I guess, a little bit later through going to gigs and seeing him play with James Muller and people like
Mark Isaacs.
Mark Isaacs. Yep. And Tim's another, you know, he's just incredible. You know, he's got incredible chops, and he's always sitting right behind you, listening to what you're doing. And if you play something, he'll pick up on it, but he won't just play it back at you. There'll be some sort of continuation of the discussion, you know, which is one of something that I find really exciting, and also leads back into what I was saying before about group interaction. And you know, you can really start something and then develop it and tell a story through the musical process.
Yes. Can you describe the type of preparation that goes into the live performance by your trio?
The live performance. Well, it's always, I find it really hard because it's hard to keep playing new things, especially if you're playing, you know, almost contrary to what I just said before about playing the same music over and over again. That has its limits, you know, and so it's hard to keep a set of music feeling fresh.
Yes.
And so I like doing things like, I love playing ballads, and I almost on every gig will play a different ballad. So that helps to just, and you know, playing a ballad in the middle of a set is a really nice way to just bring everyone together. And what I said before is, like, if things aren't quite working, then
Yep.
we can just play something that we can all relax on, and then things start to tighten up again.
So it refocuses.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. So we've just been playing a beautiful ballad by Wayne Shorter called Taru, a couple of nice Wayne Shorter ballads, and then just some, you know, some traditional classics. And but yeah, it's again, it comes back to the discussion about the music and trying to come up with ways to make the music fresh and exciting every time. Whether it's extending certain sections for solos, whether it's changing the instrumentation for a section, so whether it goes down to just piano, or whether it's piano and drums, all those things like that are go into the process of just trying to keep the interest happening, you know, and
Are you
trying to.
sometimes surprised as to how, you originally had a vision for a certain piece and how comparing that to the end result?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, totally. Yeah, well, originally, one of the tracks on the album, Sparse, that was originally supposed to be a really floaty, sort of sparse song. And took it into the trio, and we had a rehearsal, and it turned out that it felt a lot better as a medium-fast swing. And so that's how we play it, and that's how it is on the album. So it's, you know, one of those things that you just never quite know what influence other people are going to have on playing your music, you know,
Yeah.
which is really exciting.
Let's speak generally a
Sure.
little now. In the
Yep.
last 20 to 30 years, there've been numerous very, very successful piano trios. I mean, you can name them all: Brad Mehldau, Keith Jarrett, The Bad Plus, Medeski, Martin and Wood, EST. There's
There's
a
quite a
whole
few.
bunch of
Yeah.
European trios as
Yeah.
well that haven't even made that list, but
Absolutely.
what is it about the piano, bass, and drums format that makes it such a potent combination for jazz and improvised music?
That's a big question. I think the biggest thing about it is that it's small enough that you can have a really high degree of interaction, but it's also big enough that you can have a lot of instrumentational opportunities. So I think in a trio, there's something like maybe seven different instrumentation opportunities, whether it's solo piano, bass, or drums, or piano and drums, or whatever the combinations are. It's just that combination. It's that kind of that perfect combination of things. I also like playing in duo. I've been doing a lot of playing in duo lately. And again, yeah, obviously it's smaller, so you've got more chance for interaction and chance to take the music to a completely different space, especially without drums. I've been doing some duo plays with a great trumpet player, Eamon Dilworth, and another Kiwi guitarist, Peter Koopman, that's just moved to Sydney. It's really interesting, just without drums, how you approach playing rhythm and how you approach playing time, and especially playing with a guitarist, how you approach playing chords and playing harmonies together, and what implications that has to how you play standards or original music. And the third track, which is Changes, and this one features Carl Morgan on guitar. And I wrote this after listening to a lot of a New York guitarist called Kurt Rosenwinkel, especially his album called The Remedy. And there's a track on that album called Chords. So it's kind of very inspired by that song.
Steve Barry, thanks for joining me, Steve.
Thanks, Frank. Cheers.